Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Totally Football Show. Back from Hogmanay eh? With much to talk about. Arsenal-Chelsea, the most rip-roaring entertainment since Ryan Giggs had a waxing. Crystal Palace-Man City, we called that. But there's plenty we didn't see coming, like the Benevento win, the Shane Long goal thing, and another Forest firing. Join us then as we sail into all that and more as we kick off 2018 with those FA Cup third-round previews, Italian news, Sparky, and other stuff as well in this Totally Football Show. Michael Cox.
Hello, James.
Zonalmarking.net in the house. James Horncastle.
That's me.
Indeed it is. And it's a big hello from the Totally Football Show to Matt Davis.
Hello, James.
Hello, Matt. Out of Chelsea TV.
Yeah, that's it.
Does that
others.
Define you? What else should we mention at this point?
Yeah, Chelsea TV. If you support a football league club, you might hear my voice on the highlights of your team on your website. Anything else from Canadian streaming services Argentinian football for Nigerian audiences. Fingers in pies, basically.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So you do the Argentine football for Nigeria?
Yeah. It's a massive market, as you can imagine.
It probably is, but how did that come about?
It's just a company that I worked for years picked up this contract and said, do you want to do some Argentinian football for Nigeria? And I said, yeah.
But that's interesting because they keep on getting each other in the World Cup, don't they?
Yes, that's true.
So
yeah, maybe that's
weird
why.
Niche market you've cornered.
Wow. I imagine among your various duties that you were in somewhere across Wednesday's big entertainment in the Premier League. Oh, perhaps the most Premier League game of the season
so far. The game of the year, you mean?
The game of the year. I don't like what you've done there.
I was kind of a bit worried about coming over all Richard Scudamore right at the start, but
that doesn't sound like an image anybody wants to entertain at this point. But, anyway.
But you couldn't talk about it as anything other than like a thrilling football match. It was just glorious, wasn't it? I was sort of really football fatigued coming into it, and yeah, that got me out of it.
Yeah. Well, you had goals from unexpected places, you had ding-dong box-to-box action, a match that built to a crescendo, you had comedy defending, terrible misses, Arsene Wenger doing his special I'm Jesse Lingard's uncle frown thing after the refereeing decisions. it had everything, didn't it, Michael?
Yeah, it was great. I thought Arsenal were kind of responsible for most of the goal-scoring opportunities at both ends with some brilliant attacking and some absolutely crazy defending at times. The incident in the first half when Morata missed that one-on-one where, I mean, I couldn't work out who was at fault. I mean, Chambers just stopped. He seemed to think it was Mustafi's fault. Other goalkeepers would have been sweeping outside, but checks him to back off. And really, Chelsea created the better chances. And despite Arsenal dominating, it was, you know, a familiar story in going back a few years where Arsenal dominate against Chelsea and Chelsea are just more ruthless and more clinical. And really, it was two kind of goals out of nothing that saved Arsenal's blushes.
Brilliant strategy, I thought, from Wenger. Calculated risk there to basically just let Morata go through one-on-one over and over again. Obviously, he'd studied the tape from his last game and, you know, no worries from that perspective.
He's had two league goals since September. In the corridors of power there at Cobham, what's the feeling? Are Chelsea going to come in for somebody like a striker or anything? Are they looking to maybe upgrade their...
I don't think they're looking to upgrade Morata, but I think clearly Conte's not a big fan of Batshuayi, so there needs to be some sort of backup. Now, they're not allowed to recall Tammy Abraham. I know that's part of the deal they've got with him. So they're going to have to buy somebody, I think. And Morata, obviously last night, they were bad misses, all of them, because the one-on-ones, he didn't even get them on target. He didn't even force a save, which is sort of the biggest worry, and he just tends to score with his head, oddly. But maybe he could do with a bit of time out, or maybe conversely, it's a good opportunity this weekend, playing Norwich, team not doing great in the Championship, to actually put him in, let his confidence increase a bit. But I kind of think back to Didier Drogba with Morata. You know, he had a really difficult first season at Chelsea, and Morata's, what, 25? He's, you know, experiencing a new type of football. I think sometimes we tend to sort of overlook that players are humans as well. They've got this integration to do in their whole life as a broader thing. Obviously, that doesn't necessarily explain why he missed three one-on-ones last night, but he's feeling the pressure a bit. He's in a foreign country. Maybe give him a couple more months to settle down.
Yeah, I think the crucial thing about Morata for me is that this is the first season really where he's been a first-choice striker. You know, I think I looked up the stats, actually. I'm not going to start with I think because I specifically looked it up. But once he plays half a game more in the Premier League, that will be the most minutes he's ever played in a season. And we're halfway through the season. So he's had this mentality at Juventus and Real Madrid where he's come in for a start here, start 3 weeks later, a sub appearance. And I think when you're the number one and, you know, mentally and physically, I think it must be really draining, especially, like you say, coming to a new country, more physical type of football. The matches over Christmas he's not used to. It's not a massive surprise to me that he's kind of hit a brick wall to a certain extent. You know, he basically needs a little bit of a rest for the backup striker to come in and do a job. But as you say, Batshuayi is not trusted by Conte.
And you think that after that, a new Drogba could emerge from the chrysalis?
Well, Morata's a great player, but it's a learning experience. I think in some ways he's younger than 25 in terms of his experience of you know, starting up front week in, week out. And I think that's starting to show, because the misses were just, I thought the one at the end where he just kind of hooked at the ball, you know, just making sure he got it vaguely towards the goal rather than actually a shot you'd expect from a Premier League striker going for the corner. It just smacked of someone who was a little bit jaded. And just his general attitude, actually. He just looked frustrated. A couple of decisions went against him. He just looked a little bit out of sorts, really.
I mean, one last thing on him is that I've seen it said that he's a bit of a flat-track bully this season, that aside from the goal he got against United, all of his goals have really come against teams you'd expect Chelsea to be mopping up against. And instead, his pedigree is kind of contrary to that, because he remains excellent on the biggest stages in the Champions League. You know, that's where, even though he wasn't the first choice striker at Juventus when they had Tevez and Llorente, you know, he was the guy who basically forced Llorente out because he was so good in the Champions League, scoring, you know, both legs against Dortmund, winning the penalty against Monaco, scoring both legs against Real Madrid, and then in the final against Barcelona. I mean, you can't really ask more of a striker of that age than that. So, you know, while at the moment his experience in England suggests that, you know, he's finding it easier against the teams you'd expect a player of that pedigree to do so, I think there is a player there who can be what Chelsea need him to be.
Hmm. So Chelsea needs to have a little bit of faith there. Arsenal, meanwhile, have already taken steps to sort out their defensive weaknesses by bringing in Konstantinos Mavropanos from PAS Janina. I mean, we're chuckling. He might be brilliant.
Well, I mean, is this the first signing of their new chief scout, Sven Mislintat? We don't know. You know, all of those unknowns that he brought to Dortmund, like Shinji Kagawa, you know, maybe he will prove to be like that.
There's a fair chance that he's better than Callum Chambers. Uh-huh. That much we can say. Do we see Arsene Wenger's point regarding penalties? First, that handball, air quotes, against West Brom, and then the Bellerin Hazard moment. Matt, you'll have an objective view on this.
See, the West Brom one was scandalous, but I thought the Bellerin one was a penalty. I mean, he kicked the bottom of his foot. And it's one of those, if I'm dipping into my big book of commentators' clichés, anywhere else on the pitch, it's a free kick and nobody questions it. I really didn't see that there was a debate about it.
Right.
It was
a clear penalty. Bookish, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. OK, fair enough. Did you know, this from Duncan Alexander, our friend Oily Sailor, Petr Cech's last penalty save in the Premier League is closer to the launch of Gmail in 2004 than it is to the current time.
Well, I mean, to elaborate on that, he's faced, 15 penalties and he's dived the wrong way 12 times.
Oh. That's rotten luck, isn't it?
Well, I mean, usually goalkeepers now, they spend their last session before the game looking at the penalty takers on video. And clearly, maybe he's not anymore. Maybe he's concentrating on his drumming. Yeah, because he loves to drum.
Is he a drummer?
Oh, he's a massive drummer, He loves Queen. I think he got to drum with, was it Roger Taylor?
Roger Taylor,
yeah.
You'd have thought of anybody's penalty that he had the chance to save, it would be Hazard. Yeah. Because he presumably faced him taking penalties in training for a couple of years.
I think the Hazard...
And Hazard generally just rolls him down the middle, doesn't he? Which is
With Hazard, he waits for the goalkeeper to move, doesn't he? So it's a difficult one in terms of not going the right way, because I think against Hazard it is difficult. But yeah, it is a weird weakness. I can't really think of any. I mean, maybe Peter Shilton, people used to say that against with the World Cup 1990, but for a goalkeeper to have such a bad penalty saving record is really quite incredible, really.
Especially when he's so tall. You know, Peter Shilton, you look back to that 1990 shootout, he couldn't get far enough into the corner to keep any of them out, but Cech's long enough to be able to reach both posts. So You would think.
And staying on goalkeepers, Courtois last night, I mean, the save from Sanchez in the first half and then from Lacazette at the beginning of the second half, too. Really extraordinary saves.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's focus on one or two more positives. Courtois, as you mentioned, the Alonso goal, the kind of wing-back to wing-back business there with a lovely turn from Zappacosta beforehand. But just, I mean, how good is Marcus Alonso?
12 goals since he's been in the Premier League.
And, could he play up front for Chelsea?
He might be able to. I mean, it's interesting that he was kind of seen as a last-minute deadline day panic buy signing.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, he was at Bolton and Sunderland didn't want him.
Well, and Fiorentina as well.
Yeah.
I was good at Fiorentina.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
But he's really, yeah, he's absolutely sensational. And he's one of the key players in the Chelsea team. He's the only outfield player to start every Premier League game. And there's no viable cover for him, particularly. You know, there's Kennedy, and he's obviously not trusted because he hasn't played. Mm. So Alonso is one of Conte's key men, definitely.
But that's what stuns me about Chelsea's repeated interest in Alexandro from Juventus. Sandro's a very good player, but Alonso is one of that team's strengths. You wouldn't necessarily want to basically say, thank you very much, Marcus, but you're now going to be backing up for Alexandro, because, you know, for me, he's been one of the most successful signings that Chelsea have made, you know, in a quite a long period, really. Mm.
Thing is, I think there's a few things that he's not very good at, though. Mm. Not sure he's great defensively. His possession play's okay. He's a funny player where, I mean, we saw this at Fiorentina as well, where it was very obvious his two strengths were his heading, which you don't expect for a wing-back. And his free kicks, yeah. I mean, I think in open play, there's a case for getting another player in.
Really?
Personally, yeah.
Okay. What about Jack Wilshere?
Well, he kind of did his usual Jack Wilshere thing of looking very lively and then almost getting himself into
the bubble. But he also scored an absolutely brilliant goal.
Yes, he did
score. And he's getting a regular run in the team. Are you seeing him building week by week? I kind of feel like I am.
To be fair, I think he's been very good since he first came into the team. But I take your point, he is playing very well. And I think he seems to have... he seems to be a little bit more mature. Mm. I mean, the incidents yesterday were a little bit of a cause for concern. But I think Wilshere's quite an interesting guy, actually. People have this image of him that he's just a kind of a bit thick, a bit of a tearaway. But when you listen to him in interviews, he's doing his coaching badges, for example. He used his time out with injuries and stuff to do his coaching badges. He seems quite keen to just become a more intelligent footballer. He says of his time at Bournemouth that while it didn't go that well for him on the pitch, he seems to have kind of grown up a bit. You know, he's got a kid, maybe two kids, and I think he enjoyed just being away.
He's not sure?
I'm not sure. I'm sure he's sure. But he says, he enjoyed being away from London, different environment, like living in Bournemouth, like the club. And he just seems to be a little bit more mature, and you wonder really whether he kind of got a little bit too much too soon in terms of his Premier League football, and now he's had a bit of time away from the limelight, maybe at Bournemouth, to develop. And he's done well, yeah. I think he'll be definitely in the next England squad. If he stays fit, he'll be in the World Cup team.
It's always the key, isn't it? I mean, he started his sixth Premier League game in a row yesterday, and it's the first time in 4 years that he's managed that. So he's going to have to build on that, isn't he? He's going to have to keep playing. I really hope that he does, because he's just had such a rotten time of it, and he was supposed to be one of the many saviours of English football. But
yeah, over a period where you'd expect someone who is as fragile as Jack Wilshere to break down injury-wise. Yeah.
Indeed. Well, Arsenal-Chelsea was great, and they get to do it all over again next week. In the Carabao Cup, what is it, semi-finals?
Yeah.
Before that, they've got FA Cup action. You mentioned Chelsea taking on Norwich. Mm. Arsenal, meanwhile, have Forest.
They do.
We'll talk about that later, Matt. Much, much later.
Listeners, our partnership with Paddy Power helps to keep this podcast free. And speaking of free, when you join Paddy's Rewards Club, every time you place 5 bets of £10 or more on any sport in a single week, Paddy will give you a free £10 bet the following week. Sign up now at paddypower.com. T's and C's apply. Max £10 bonus per person per week. Specific odds required. Exclude shops and cashed out bets. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop.
Matt, as a commentator, what else is in your big book of cliches?
Oh, crikey.
What's your... There's one.
You've seen them given. Yes. Try and avoid that as much as possible.
Really?
Anything regarding the colour of players' boots... I found myself slipping into that quite a lot. And a player applauds the intention, if not the execution. I've had to delete that from my vocabulary because I found that it was just coming up week after week.
But, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's the only way you get a round of applause from a fellow player, isn't it? If you get a pass wrong.
Yes.
You never get the applause if the pass was right and then they miss the chance. If you see what I mean.
No, I do see what you mean.
Yeah.
All right, then. Massive glut of games over New Year's. But without doubt, the key match amidst all of that was Crystal Palace, Man City. And you were there, Michael. You were there to see Man City's winning run come to an end, to everyone's surprise. Well, almost everyone's.
Yeah, weirdly, I did think of you as that was as that was happening, because it was a bold prediction a few weeks in advance. But yeah, fair play. I guess the story really is that it could have been their unbeaten run gone because that last minute penalty miss.
So, what was the mood in Selhurst Park when that penalty was given?
Well, I was quite impressed by the fact at full time the Palace fans really cheered as if it was a great result, and it was. But you know, if I was a Palace fan, I would have still been absolutely devastated about that penalty miss. But yeah,
well, I mean, a miss. It was Edison doing an Edison. Basically.
Sorry, it was a save, but it was, I'd say, pretty much as bad a penalty as you can get. Kind of lightly placed. I think even Petr Cech probably could have saved that one, to be honest. But it was good, and I think the positive thing was that City came. I wouldn't say they came close, but Newcastle gave them a game. The previous match by sitting back and just not engaging. And Palace didn't do that. They played quite aggressively, quite bold. Okay, they had to withstand spells of pressure in the second half. But actually, they kept quite a high defensive line and they did engage City high up the pitch. And I think that's quite a good thing for the Premier League, because if any other managers say, well, how do you go about stopping Man City? Mm. And they look to Palace, they say, okay, well, you have to be positive. You have to be a bit bold. You have to kind of tactically foul De Bruyne and have two of your players out for the season.
but it's worth it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's worth it for
but
that
also
point.
You have to have Wilfried Zaha, so you can, or at least it's handy to have one, so you can ping diagonal balls up to him repeatedly.
Yes, and it was the one thing I had a little bit of a problem with Hodgson's approach was that Zaha, for most of the game, was up against Kyle Walker, who's obviously really quick and capable of coping with him. And it was only when he switched right and went up against Danilo, who's not as quick, not really a left back, that he started to get some joy. He created a chance for Townsend. He won that penalty late on. And so, yeah, I mean, Zaha, I think, is quite possibly, along with Mahrez, the best player outside the top six this season. He's just, every game he makes things happen. And his end product can be inconsistent, but that's what a winger is. You know, that's why he's playing for Palace. That's why he's a winger. He's just a really good player.
All right. Dan and punching out for the season. City, of course, losing Gabriel Jesus. And I think the latest word, there was Jesus wept moments on the sidelines. But a couple of months, they're saying now. Is that right?
It looks like it, yeah.
Okay. They bounced back. They took all of 39 seconds, indeed, to bounce back in their next game against Watford, Raheem Sterling. Curiously, he's now scored the earliest Premier League goal, this one after 39 seconds, and also the latest,
that's
James,
good.
After 96 minutes and 35 seconds against Bournemouth, much earlier in the season. But yeah, so one or two issues there for Man City, but they get Stones and David Silva back. Palace continued their fine run straight after this by going down to Southampton, beating them 2-1. They've moved up to 14th. They've had one defeat in their last 11. Roy Hodgson is basically Gandalf.
Well, they came back from behind again. Yeah, they've got 11 points from losing positions so far this season, and there was redemption for Milijov Evicic, if that's how you pronounce his name.
Milijovic.
I was trying to get all of the I's in there.
Matt?
I thought it was Milivojevic.
Yeah, I think you might be correct.
I'll just call him Milly from now on. Yeah. And it was quite... I saw that this strike was described as, you know, a screamer, but he seemed really quite tentative about when he hit it. I mean, he didn't sort of put his foot through the ball, and it wasn't placed either. It was just like, oh, have a go, or shall I? And it went in.
I think that's massively harsh.
It was a strike.
I thought that was a nice beautifully stroked. I mean, it wasn't a scream. I think a screamer has to kind of burst the net. Yeah. But this was, I thought that was a beautifully controlled flick back, almost a reverse shot, if you can call it that. You're not having that? You think that was...
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Whose name do you most dread when you get team sheets as a commentator, Matt?
Well, the absolute pinnacle of that kind of thing for commentators was when James McCarthy and James MacArthur were playing in the Wigan midfield together. So anything after that, I'm kind of okay with. Milivojevic isn't great, especially when you've got a co-commentator who struggles with it. I had one who used to really struggle with Branislav Ivanovic, actually, and that kind of bleeds over. I'll withhold his name for his sake. We just couldn't get over Branislav Inanin. It was just like, because it rolls together so well, he sort of struggled with it. But yeah, once you've got past McCarthy, because that used to give me sleepless nights, I think anything else, like you do with the chap who owns Leicester, you just break it down into parts, don't you? And it's
kind
of
exactly what I did.
Yeah.
Shrivadana Prava.
Yeah. Easy for you to say.
OK, here's Hiltko saying Roy Hodgson has taken a side who has lost their first seven games without scoring a goal to one who have suffered just one defeat. We're now in 11. Let's not downplay this. This is absolutely incredible. The way he's playing his football as well, there's lots of teams that are being, well, lots of managers that are taking quite a cynical approach down the bottom end, but not old Roy. And another question we had tweeted in says, bearing in mind, this is from Jacob, bearing in mind Hodgson's remarkable effect on Palace, why is it that his time with England in tournaments was so underwhelming? Do any possible explanations exclusively affect England players? Is any hope thus for World Cup 18 misguided?
Well, in terms of Hodgson with England, I think he broadly did a very good job over the five-year period.
Right.
And then England played very badly at key moments. And I think maybe if we do well at this World Cup, people will look back and say, actually, this is the guy who brought through Ali and Sterling and Lallana when they were quite young and gave them opportunities and did blood youngsters. I thought the funny thing with his approach was that, you know, he was criticised for being really defensive when he was appointed. And then actually we kind of lost our way because we're too attack-minded. We're too attack-minded at the World Cup. We basically played four forwards. The Euros, he tried to play Rooney in midfield, and it's almost like he went away from his traditional approach.
Right.
The game against Iceland, to be fair, was just a real kind of psychological weakness from the players. And I thought that interview that Allardyce did that essentially got him sacked was quite interesting when he was talking about the mental weaknesses of the players and how that was the thing he had to address. And I'd go along with that. So
okay.
I'm not, maybe Hodgson could have done something, but I'm not, that's the kind of thing that is the player's responsibility, I think.
It's an impossible job.
There you go. That was a show, isn't it? Did you ever see that film? An Impossible Job, the Graham Taylor documentary.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well,
worth seeking out. I mean, it's from, you know, before you were born and that, but but yeah. Thanks for that question then, Jacob. City, next up, are at home to Burnley on Saturday. They beat Burnley 3-0 back in October. Claretts, by the way, haven't had a win in five now. After this clash, they've got Bristol City. They're also in the Carabao Cup semi-final. Of course, Bristol City beat Man United, didn't they, in the previous round? That's going to be exciting. And I don't know, well, it might be a bit of rotation. Maybe rest Kevin De Bruyne after his nasty knock against Palace. That'll be something interesting for next week. We'll talk about that on Monday. Palace, meanwhile, on Monday night, are going to be away at Brighton. Which is A, exciting because it's Palace Brighton.
And B, not because it was 0-0 in the Premier League.
There you go. Well, and C, because they're going to be using VAR for the first time in this country.
Okay.
James, you've seen plenty of VAR in Serie A. And what's your view on it?
I like it. I think broadly, on the whole, it's been a positive. We've seen a lot more correct decisions made. However, there have been some very high-profile blunders because even though people look at this and think it's technology, it is humans using this technology. And with humans, there are errors, glaring errors, which you cannot understand because even when you give video assistant referees all the angles that we have in studios or on TV, they still make glaring mistakes.
See, for me, even if, I guess, and I think I was completely wrong because I welcomed it as an innovation, but I now feel completely the other way. And I guess it depends on whether you think football is a sport intended to crown the best team and reward excellence or whether it's something that's there to entertain people. Now, if you think football's there to entertain people, that it's primarily an entertainment, then VAR is death. Because well, the sight of people scoring goals and then standing around waiting to know if they can celebrate and the crowd doing the same, I never realised I was naive.
Well, I mean, there are cases where it's actually quite tantric, if you like.
Ooh.
Because if you talk to some Roma fans, before Christmas they played Cagliari, they had a 95th minute winner from Fazio, which they had to wait 2 minutes for, basically, for it to be convalidated. And they said that the euphoria from that was more than anything that they would have normally expected from a winning goal. But having said that, you have very high profile managers like Simone Inzaghi coming out and saying it just takes all of the emotion out of football, and I prefer playing in the Europa League where there is no video assistant referees. So yeah,
push the biggest victim, of course, the commentators who have to fill for, what, 2-3 minutes?
Yeah, somebody spare us a thought. It's not for me, to be honest. I don't watch loads of Serie A, so I haven't seen the impact that it's had. But my concern, and you've kind of addressed that, James, but is the delay between the goal being scored and I'm more of a football as an entertainment product as much as anything else. And I like goal line technology because it's a black or white decision, isn't it? You know, it's either over the line or not. But the more you bring it in, the more it kind of takes elite level football away from lower level football, and then, you know, football that kids start playing and what have you, because it's just not representative of the game to be played, you know, when you start for fun and then as it gets more serious. And yeah, I'm not convinced by it.
Good result for Stoke this Christmas. Puzzled looks around. Eddie Hall becoming world's strongest man, Michael, of course.
Yeah, I saw it. And
oh, you did? Okay.
It was actually a mixed day for Stoke because then Phil Taylor lost the darts later.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Yeah, great world's strongest man victory back in, what was it, April, was it?
It was May, yeah. Yeah, but emotional
and
scenes.
is he retired now?
Well, yeah. He says I don't know, he might actually be joining us on the show when we do our next one. Next Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was. I thought it was terrific. I know a lot of people, especially because it was Eddie that won, and if you haven't seen it yet, I'm awfully sorry for the spoiler, but a lot of people did know the result before, but I still thought it was very entertaining seeing him do it.
Yeah, I kind of knew the result, but I didn't know that he was going to be so emotional and announce his retirement after.
That was a shock, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know about that?
Did I know that about his promise to his nan and stuff? No, yeah. He'd never said that before. Yeah. I knew something about the amount of impact it had on his life, because there's no way it couldn't have.
Mm.
But yeah, he was. I was really taken aback by the way he spoke after taking the title. It was obviously a huge moment for him. He's actually. We actually did a post World Strongest Man interview with him, which you can find on a World Strongest Man podcast. If you're really interested in what happens now for Eddie Hall and what he thought the tournament, that's out there if you want. Kind of contractually, I'm obliged to talk now about FA Cup third round.
Okay. Are we talking about Stoke then?
No, I was going to... I was going to leave Stoke till later in case they fire Sparky. I thought if we do it later in the show, then we don't have to come back and re-record anything.
Yeah.
So Lewis was asking, what FA Cup fixture is most likely to see an upset? There's a broad range of options here. Some really interesting matchups, actually. How about Fleetwood-Leicester?
Oh, that's good.
Because?
Well, because it's the Jamie Vardy derby.
Right.
And the Jamie Vardy story we're all very much aware of and kind of almost take it for granted now. But he finished top scorer and won the conference with Fleetwood, moved to Leicester and then won the Premier League. It's still an incredible story, and I'm quite looking forward to that one.
All right. Yeah. I hope he plays, because of course he missed the last game for Leicester, didn't he?
Oh, of course he did, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, hopefully.
Fleetwood's ground is called Highbury. Did you know that?
Yes. No.
And their manager is Uwe Rosler.
Ah.
Hmm. We might see a debut for Adrian Silva as well. I mean, a first start. He did come on.
Yeah, it was nice for him to come on for 5 minutes.
Him wearing the 14 shirt, is that...
That was a wonderful piece of trolling, wasn't it?
I
covered that game and I thought it just has to be. I mean, the reception he got was unbelievable. But yeah, it's got to be, hasn't it? For 14? I mean, glorious.
The number of
well
seconds
done.
They missed the deadline.
Yeah,
by.
Yeah, yeah. Congratulations, Leicester. Yeah.
Right.
I didn't realise that. That's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, could be fun, Shrewsbury against West Ham.
This is the Joe Hart derby as well, no? Because, you know, didn't he spend his time...
Yeah, he started at Shrewsbury.
Started at Shrewsbury.
Did he?
Yeah.
Probably playing this game
Shrewsbury
as well.
Shrewsbury or Shrewsbury?
Shrewsbury.
Really?
Yeah. I learned that when they played Chelsea in the Cup a couple of years ago, and Eden Hazard called them Strawberry. That's definitely wrong. But Shrewsbury, apparently.
It's nice, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Strawberry.
Yeah.
Mm.
Used to play. Do they still play at Gay Meadow?
Mm-hmm. It's been renamed something corporate now, unfortunately.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
The new ground, which is called the New Meadow, is a Category 4 UEFA stadium, so it could host,
a Europa League final.
It could do, yeah. The Straubs are currently second in League One, which is remarkable given that they were almost relegated last season. West Ham, meanwhile, may well be a bit pooped after their Thursday night antics against Spurs at Wembley.
You also worry a bit with a lot of these potential shocks, Bournemouth, Wigan, even Brentford, Notts, which is a Championship versus League Two game, Newcastle, Luton. A lot of the lower league teams there are actually going for promotion, so they might not put out their first teams either. So obviously that lessens the chance of a shock. Luton, you'd think they've dipped off a little bit lately, but only Man City have scored more goals than Luton in the entire Football League.
Yeah.
Newcastle, obviously not very good in the Cups, other things on their mind, but if Luton play a reserve side, they'll probably get beat.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Yeah, those goal stats, 62 goals that the Hatters have scored in 26 games. 62. In 26, they've hit 7 twice. They beat Yeovil 8-2 on the opening day of the season. Newcastle, as you mentioned, Rafa Benitez taking a fairly pragmatic view about where he's going to commit resources. And I absolutely think that could be one of the potential upsets of this weekend. Is that fair, do you think?
Yeah, I'd go along with that, definitely.
All right.
Yeah.
although it is at St James's. Tottenham are taking on AFC Wimbledon. Question, if Spurs get to the semi-final, do they have to play at a neutral venue?
Presumably not. No, that will be home advantage for them.
Wow. How things have changed that we're now talking about Wembley being home advantage.
Yeah. And of course, scene of maybe the most famous FA Cup semi-final when Gascoigne scored against Arsenal.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Man United are hosting Derby. Man United, where it's all smiles as usual. Mourinho, after complaining about only being able to spend $300 million, calling out referees, saying that Paul Scholes is jealous of Paul Pogba's money. I mean, that's what he effectively said, wasn't it?
This is just classic moo, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's going to make this man happy? Like, I don't like the guy particularly.
I think he's happy being unhappy.
Is he? Is that what makes him happy?
Well, hang on. So did you have much contact with him when
I
you
did,
were...
unfortunately, at the worst possible time. I started doing the post-match interviews in the season that he got fired.
Oh, right. So season that he got fired?
The most recent one,
yeah.
So my very first post-match interview with him was after the Eva Canero incident, and it only got worse from there.
Oh, right. How difficult was that, Matt? What did you say?
I said, can you give us your assessment of what was an entertaining game? And he said, you've already given an assessment. And then there was a silence that was much longer than that. And
right.
I tried to pick up the interview and not much happened. I found him quite an unpleasant individual.
Really?
In total contrast to Antonio Conte, who couldn't be lovelier.
Nice.
Yeah, he's an absolutely terrific fellow.
Okay.
But Jose, I just kind of thought, he's obviously always wanted the Manchester United job.
Mm.
You know, he's got it now. He's got more money than he could ever spend. He's got a nice family. He's a good-looking chap.
He's got Pep down the road.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you've got to find some joy in life, haven't you? Where's he going to get it from? Is it just from complaining that is what makes him happy?
I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting question you raise. A lot of people feel he's moved straight onto his third season without stopping in the second in at Man United. Does that ring true to you, Michael?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I think whether it's the third season or the fourth season or the second season, I think the theory is the same, that basically he rubs people up the wrong way and people get sick of him. And I think that kind of constant antagonism feels a bit dated now.
Mm.
You know, I know Guardiola gets wound up sometimes, but he's basically, I can imagine if you play under Guardiola, you kind of get on with him, you believe in him. Conte seems to inspire great trust from all his players. And I think some of these Man United players just must be thinking, why does it have to be like this? Why can't I just have a more pleasant existence, to be honest?
The pop he had at Klopp about the price of the Van Dijk fee is just water off a duck's back for Klopp, isn't it? And this is what's bothering him, I think, that people aren't rising to the bait anymore.
Right. He's rubbing Jesse Lingard up the right way, though. You'd have to say that, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, 7 in his last 9. The winner against Watford. Both goals against Burnley, which include the last-minute equaliser he got for them. He killed the game against Everton.
Scored in the FA Cup final. Scored the winner in the FA Cup final a couple of years ago, didn't he? He's actually an interesting case study in terms of players who get loaned out a lot, and now it's generally seen that that's detrimental to a player's career. But he obviously developed much later. He's 25 now?
Where was he out on loan?
He went to Derby, he went to Birmingham, he had a spell somewhere else, I can't remember. He had 4 separate loan spells, I remember that. And yeah, you know, sometimes players just develop a little later, don't they? And he's also, a lot of the criticism of Mourinho is that he doesn't develop players that he's got in the way that Pep does or Conte does. Well, maybe Lingard's a sort of argument against that.
Yeah.
That he seems to have come on since he's been playing for Mourinho.
Jesse could be facing his former club Derby then this weekend. Derby are up to 2nd in the Championship.
Ooh. Only Harry Kane, incidentally, has scored more goals in December than Jesse Lingard.
Is that right?
That's right.
All right, well, Derby certainly got Premier League players all over the pitch, but they are Huddleston, Nugent, Vidra, Ledley, Scott Carson, Curtis Davis. So, I don't know. Is upset potential here?
I don't think so. I think the FA Cup's really important for all the top 6 except Manchester City. Because in particular, the managers, there's going to be a lot of questions asked in boardrooms about how have Manchester City won the league by such a massive distance.
Mm.
And if you can answer it with, well, yeah, but we won the FA Cup, that maybe appeases it slightly. So I think for Man United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Tottenham and to a lesser extent Arsenal, because they've won it very, very recently and a few times. But it's big for the other sides. And also teams like Leicester. You know, Leicester, there was a lot of disappointment in their League Cup quarterfinal when they rested players, didn't they, against City, which was a good chance for them to get through. They're basically battling for 7th with Everton and Burnley. So why not make this, the focal point of the second half of your season? You're away at Fleetwood, should get through that. And, yeah.
It's a fair argument. We'll talk a little bit more about some of those big 6 clubs in their third round draws. And, of course, continental football and our Stoke chat and more questions from you, all coming up.
Listeners, the January transfer window is open for business, and if you think you can identify better value than Chelsea did when they spent £50 million on a washed-up Fernando Torres back in 2011, then you need to check out the Football Stock Market, Football Index. Football Index is a new way to profit from your football knowledge and make money. Buy players, build a portfolio, earn dividends, and sell at a profit. And a tax-free profit at that. Because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can try Football Index and trade up to £1,000 entirely risk-free. Just head to footballindex.co.uk, enter the promo code TOTALLY, and if you don't love Football Index, you'll get a full refund with their 7-day money-back guarantee. Download the app or play online at footballindex.co.uk and become a football trader today. T's and C's apply. You must be over 18. Deposit required, and please trade responsibly.
We were just debating whether to go with European football at this point and the extraordinary events in Italy, and I mean extraordinary, listeners. But then Michael said, I've got a great stat about the FA Cup,
well,
so let's hear that.
I'll frame it as a quiz question. What has not happened for the first time in 67 years to do with the FA Cup?
Is it something to do with a non-league team being in the
It is. No non-league teams in the third round for the first time in 67 years, which is incredible, when last year two got to the fifth round and one got to the sixth round, Lincoln, which was the first time in over 100 years. It's a bit of a shame because we're looking through trying to find these kind of
the
potential
magic.
Yeah, well, trying to find some potential giant killings, and a lot of them are quite established league clubs that, you know, you wouldn't be massively surprised if there was an upset. It's quite nice when you do have a Lincoln in the third round.
Absolutely. All right, well, one or two other options. You touched on Norwich-Chelsea, that's Saturday evening. Sunday, late afternoon, your team, Matt, I mean, you know, your team of the heart, Nottingham Forest, will be hosting Arsenal with caretaker manager Gary Brazil in the dugout. They've gone and fired their manager again.
Yes, unfortunately so, yeah. It's a strange one because I wasn't completely convinced by Mark Warburton, but Forest were and are well clear of relegation trouble, and they stayed up by 2 goals last season.
Mm.
So that's progress. Unfortunately, they've lost more games than anyone outside the relegation zone, and they are in a poor run of form at the moment. But my concern would be if Aitor Karanka was the heavy favourite, probably by the time the pod goes out, somebody else will have got the job. But Karanka is the heavy favourite.
Really?
If he's going to come in, that's such a disparity between two styles of football that it maybe says there's no joined up thinking. And the other concern that Forest fans have got is that we've just got rid of an owner who in his 5 seasons changed the manager at least once every time.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to see out the season with the same manager. Obviously, you get the turnover of players, the turnover of staff. And we kind of thought this new owner, although he's obviously got his troubles, what with his match-fixing allegations.
Yeah,
we thought that he was a bit more stable in terms of his hiring and firing, but it would appear not.
Right. Last 9 Forest managers, Stats fans, have managed to combine 295 games. That's, what, 33.7 each? Billy Davis, the most with 59, and that must have felt like a full 59.
Yeah,
Alex McLeish, the fewest with 7. Arsene Wenger, meanwhile, will be having his 1,209th game with Arsenal. Arsenal, the holders, of course, they have won the FA Cup a record 13 times. It's the trophy, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a question for you, that they've won the second most. What's the one they've won the most? Fourth place finish trophy. It's real.
Do you want to know something vaguely interesting about Arsenal's trophy cabinet? Or their historical trophy cabinet.
Yep.
On the list of their honours, they won, I think, the first ever Kent Senior Cup.
Really?
Because they used to be based in Woolwich, and so they used to enter Kent Senior Cup.
Wow. Michael, can you make... I'm going with this game to my mum, and I bought her a ticket for Christmas. She's a big Forest fan.
Oh,
she's
nice.
Really excited. She thinks she's going to see some stars. I don't think she is. Can you make any case for Arsenal's under-23s not beating Forest? Because I can see you won 4-0 at the City Ground in the League Cup last season, wasn't it? Surely it's just going to be the same again.
Yeah, I expect so. I must say I haven't seen much of Forest, so I can't really judge them. But I think Arsenal's backup 11 is quite good. You know, they've been used to playing together as well in the Europa League. So, yeah, I think Arsenal will win that. Just on the subject of Gary Brazil.
Okay, yes, sir.
I know we're going back a bit. Do you know his daughter plays for Fiorentina?
Yeah, she moved from Birmingham in the summer. Ellie.
Yeah, lovely story.
Yeah.
On the subject of your mum, do you commentate for her while you're, you know, sat?
I was back for Christmas watching Everton Swansea just before Christmas, and my stepfather had to ask me to stop commentating.
Right.
Because he was trying to enjoy the game.
Okay.
So, yeah.
It's nice. good. Now, your employers, Chelsea, taking on Norwich, mentioned that, yada, yada, yada. But Friday, it all kicks off, this FA Cup third round, with Liverpool-Everton. Hoo-hoo-hoo! James, are you excited?
Well, yeah. I think this should be... I mean, again, I would say in terms of the derbies that are in this game, this is, yeah, in this round of fixtures, this is definitely up there, let's say, with Brighton Palace. But Liverpool will be looking to make amends, or perhaps... really stick it to Everton after what happened, only a few weeks ago, when Big Sam somehow pulled the draw out of nowhere.
Ah, yeah. Well, do they need to stick it to Everton or stick it to Jurgen Klopp's team selection? I thought that was the real...
Get Rafa. I mean, will Salah be playing in this? I mean, what's he going to do here?
Well, Salah and Mane are going to be away in Ghana the day before, aren't they?
Yeah, they fly back overnight on Thursday from the... African Player of the Year celebrations in Ghana.
Yeah, and Klopp says, well, it's no different. We'll be sleeping in a hotel, they'll be sleeping in a plane. But I'm not sure that's necessarily true. I think there is fatigue from travel. Mm. I'd be surprised if either of them... I mean, Salah's got a slight injury, hasn't he? So I'd be surprised if either of them played.
Could be a start for Adam Lallana.
Yes, it's great to see him back because I think he's an excellent player for Liverpool. I think he's often England's key player as well, looking forward to the summer.
Mm.
And if Coutinho's off, then I think Lallana will have a particularly big role to play there. And I must say, if they do get rid of Coutinho, having brought in Salah, and if they get fully fit Lallana back, I don't think they're too much worse off, personally.
There you go. And are you excited by the way that Lallana is visually kind of metamorphosing into Andrea Pirlo?
Yes. Well, I was going to go for Joe Allen, actually, but you've really upgraded
both great
him there.
Players.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Liverpool are on a terrific run of form. They're unbeaten in 16, sailed through Christmas. I think they were the kind of big festive fixture winners, weren't they?
Yes, they did very well. And it goes back to the rotation again. They didn't seem to be particularly fatigued and got that late goal against Burnley, which was interesting, obviously, because of the two centre-backs combining.
Yeah, and wasn't that poignant?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of their last... Oh, that's what everyone said. They've signed off with a wistful goal, a glimpse of what might have been had Virgil van Dijk not been turning up to take both their jobs at the same time.
Particularly with Clavin getting the trademark Klopp arm round the shoulder on the way out, like he was being, walked out to the woods to... thanks, Ragnar.
I love the mock-ups of Ragnar Clavin being announced by Barcelona. They were really good.
So there you go. Everton, meanwhile, didn't have such a good Christmas. What happened to them? Let's see. They conceded 4 goals. Oh, they lost to Bournemouth and Man United.
Yes, they didn't look good against Manchester United. I thought they were...
Got some breaking news here.
Oh, what's this?
Cenk Tosun.
Ah, has he gone to Everton?
Well, Sam Allardyce is saying we've agreed a deal at the stage, personal terms as well. We might be able to get him registered in time to play in the Cup.
Really?
Ooh.
Now, that's big. There has been some debate about how... valid Tosun's goal-scoring record in Turkey is, how much we can really read into it. But you've seen him at work in the Champions League with Besiktas and have been very impressed, I think, James. Is that right?
Yeah, I think he's an all-round striker. And what did he get? 4 goals in the Champions League group stages? And I think what you've seen from him is he's got better every year. And that's something that scouts really value.
How old is he now, then? Asking the tough questions on the Totally Football Show.
He is...
I guess 25.
All right. Mike, Matt?
He's 26.
26.
Okay. So close.
Gets better every year. And at Besiktas, he was never really the go-to guy in terms of, there was always a bigger name, let's say, that that the fans expected the goals from. So initially it was Demba Ba, then it was Mario Gomez, and then it was Vincent Aboubakar.
Mm.
And gradually he basically said, muscled his way in, always kept his name in the manager's thoughts, and became the 24 goal scorer that he is. So yeah, I think it's obviously they've been crying out for a player like him at Everton. So
they didn't have a shot on target against United. The second time in 4 games that's happened. One last thing on Liverpool. The Coutinho business, do you think that's going to happen, Matt?
It's a strange one because he can't play in the Champions League, can he? And Barcelona are 9 points clear at the top of the table. So it's a slightly curious time for him to move, unless he's just insistent that he doesn't want to play for Liverpool anymore. But that seems sort of counter to how he acted in the summer.
Yeah. Of course, there are so many games coming up this weekend, including Coventry Stoke. Talking about Mark Hughes a little bit later on. But that'll be after we do our continental roundup. Just before we move on, who do you think the upset of the weekend's going to be?
It'd be an upset if Swansea beat Wolves.
Right, okay.
I would say Coventry Stoke, but not a particularly glamorous one, but I'd also fancy Notts County maybe to win at Brentford League 2 versus Championship for having a very good season.
Kevin Nolan's Notts County?
Yes.
I'll go for Fulham, who are at home to Southampton.
Yes.
I think Luton against Newcastle.
Cry, they're all flying now, aren't they? Right, a quick break, and then Europe. Spain. Diego Costa made his debut for Atletico Madrid in the Copa del Rey against Lleida Esportiu. He scored.
Yeah, 5 minutes after coming on.
Torres didn't look happy when Diego Costa scored. They flicked a shot of him on the bench and he just looks like sad, as if he wasn't going to play ever again.
Oh, all right. Also in Copa del Rey news, Vincenzo Montella made his debut for Sevilla and they won 2-0 at Cádiz. Mm. And he's got the derby coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
That's big. In Italy, where Vincenzo Montella comes from.
Yes.
The big news over Christmas was, James, over New Year's was...
Napoli being winter champions?
Well, yeah. I'm going to say Benevento winning a football match.
Yes.
They won a football match.
They did.
What happened?
Well, it didn't look like it was going to happen because they lost a number of their players to injury. What, Cicciaretti in the warm-up, and he's on his way to Napoli and the fans turned on him. It didn't look like it was going to be a very good atmosphere. And then Massimo Corda, who they signed in the summer and basically thought, actually, he's not that good. We're not going to play him anymore. They did play him and he scored the winning goal.
Wow, 1-0 over Chievo. Yeah. Now that leaves them 9 points behind Hellas Verona, 11 points from safety, but it's on.
Yeah, I mean, they've still got the worst ever record at the end of a first half of the season. I think they've got 4 points. The previous was five.
Mm-hmm.
So even though, you know, we love them because of, you know, what, you know, their goalkeeper scoring against Milan, getting that late equaliser and this sort of winning their first game and the last game of the year,
right.
They are historically awful.
Yeah, no, so, that's fair. Yeah. Okay, so second biggest story then over the kind of new year, I'm going to go with Udinese.
Ah, yes. Now,
which I find really, really confusing. Udinese have won 5 straight games. They were absolutely terrible. I can't remember how many games they'd won in the previous, 12 matches before Massimo Odda came in?
Yeah.
But I guess...
They've already got more points than they had in the first 12 games of the season.
But the really bizarre thing is that Massimo Odda, who's taken over and worked this miracle there, is the same Massimo Odda who last season at Pescara... From his first 24 games, only got 1 victory, and that was at Tavolino because the other team had made a mistake with the regulations.
Yeah, they fielded an ineligible player. That was against Sassuolo. But Odo, to be fair to him, in getting Pescara promoted with a very exciting brand of football, launching the career of a player that we've got excited about this season in Lucas Torreira as well, had some pedigree. And yeah, he's part of that 2006 generation of players, won the World Cup, and he's now making their way as a manager. He was the hairdresser for that Italy squad in 2006. He gave all the players a bit of a trim.
Right.
And I seem to remember Marcello Lippi stringing him along, saying, "Oh, you've got to be ready. You've got to be ready for tomorrow. You've got to be ready." And Otto thought he was going to be playing, and he said Lippi just expected a haircut out of him.
So, damn. Yeah. Right.
Is it Udinese who Kevin Lasagna plays for?
It is.
Yes. I did an Udinese game. I don't do much Italian football, but Udinese. It was for DAZN in Canada.
Canadian listeners.
Yeah, big in Canada. It was against Napoli, was it November? I think it was Oddo's first game, actually.
Yeah,
and I was, Jerry Taggart was my co-commentator, and Lasagna came on and he got the ball and they said he's looking for a teammate to Pasta. And Jerry Taggart was really angry. Just did, no, we're not having any more Pasta puns.
Really?
In many ways, it's the highlight of my career, that, but it didn't
take it. You're in the right place for Italian puns here.
Gareth Jones, for example, says, "I was impressed by the wonderfully named Kevin Lasagna at the weekend. Meaty performance topped off with a crisp finish." Where is he?
It was a great goal.
And he scored as well in every single one.
Yeah, five straight games.
Five straight games. Where's he come out of? Well, the answer is, James?
Carpi
Diem and all that, who were in Serie A, much to everyone's surprise, the smallest team ever, I think, to reach the top flight. Smaller even than Chievo, is that fair? Or possibly not smaller than Chievo.
Well, I mean, they certainly played in a smaller ground than Chievo do.
Right.
But yeah, all of those clubs we mentioned, Benevento, are taking inspiration, I suppose, from what Chievo did all those years ago.
Absolutely. Anyway, so Kevin Lasagna, is he the real reason for Udinese's success?
No, I mean, he's been brilliant. I think this is the case of a new manager bounce who's come in and completely transformed them, playing a new system, 3-5-2, and getting the best out of their best players. I mean, Udinese have had a real lean spell since Francesco Guidolin left the club, you know, when he used to get them quite regularly into the Champions League playoffs, only for them to stuff it up against Braga and against Arsenal. Their recruitment hasn't been that good since then, but they seem to have found really nice group of players at the moment with Jakub Jankto and Antonin Barak, these two Czechs in midfield who are doing great things for them under Oddo. Yeah, I mean, I know there are a lot of Watford fans quite eager to see if particularly those two were willing to come across at some stage in the summer. I think, you know, with Jankto in particular, you know, he's someone who now has such high profile interest that it's likely they'd get a bid that Watford couldn't afford to match, really, from one of the big Italian clubs.
But though they're part of the same setup.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, naturally, it comes down to the player. And if the player is offered to go and play for Juventus, whether it's Pavel Nedved or go and play for Inter, I imagine they would still choose that.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that's a story to follow because, yeah, I mean, you look at these sort of winning runs. In Italy, they're going, oh, they've been as good as Barcelona and Man City in December. It's quite a turnaround, really.
It certainly is. They will be taking on Chievo this weekend when Serie A returns. Fiorentina up against Inter on Friday night. It's going to be an exciting game. Roma take on Atalanta, an Atalanta team who've just put themselves into the Coppa Italia semi-finals, where they'll be hosting Juventus after Juventus beat Torino Wednesday night in their Coppa Italia quarterfinal 2-0, and that marked the end, to my surprise, of Sinisa Mihailovic's reign as Torino manager. I know that they've not had the best of runs, 3 wins in their last 17 games, but that's a surprising move from Torino.
Yeah, it is a bit of a surprise because they put Roma out of the cup just before Christmas. They also beat Lazio at the Olimpico, but yeah, they expected more this season because, you know, it's quite funny. You go back at the end of the last transfer window and you read Gazzetta's ratings. They put Milan's business as the best and then Torino's as the second best.
Oh, really?
Because, yeah, they shelled out a club record for
both teams doing brilliantly.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I think people overrated their transfer windows, but they seem to have, they put a lot of money into their defence because they got rid of Joe Hart, for example. They need a new goalkeeper, and Sirigu has been good, Nkulu and Saldi. But I mean, I think one of the problems for them is Belotti, who was so good last year, so much so they put a €100 million buyout clause in his contract. He got a knee injury, raced back to be ready for that playoff against Sweden for Italy, which, of course, we know went badly for Italy. He's now got injured again, and he hasn't been scoring anywhere near as like as he was last year. So they've been getting far too many draws, and they expected not only to be kind of in the race or conversation for the Europa League, but nailed on for Europa League, and that's just not happened for them.
Listeners, do you like shaving and looking smooth and clean?
Yes!
But do you enjoy having to go to the shops for new razors and other shaving supplies?
No!
Well, Cornerstone gives you everything you need for a great shave, and they'll deliver it all right to your door. Cornerstone's super sharp, award-winning blades are engineered in Germany, which is always a good sign, and their range of balms, creams and exfoliators are all environmentally friendly, alcohol-free and suitable for the most sensitive skin. Get £10 off your first order and check out the range for yourself at cornerstone.co.uk/totally and find out why tens of thousands of men have switched over to Cornerstone.
One or two other bits of business. Dan Atkin wants us to mention his name because we chopped it out last time. Dan, I'm so sorry about that. Producer Ben wants us to mention that Everton brought on Lennon and McCarthy against Man United, but they still got Beetle. It was a long and winding road. Can they get back? It's pretty sad.
Hard day's night.
Yeah.
For Sam, presumably.
Yeah. Super. Stoke. That's not super. Recap here. You lose 5-0 against Chelsea, but you field a weakened team because you've identified the home game against Newcastle as where you're going to get your points. You then go and lose the home game with Newcastle 1-0, And then you blame what, the media, for creating an agenda?
Yeah, I blame everybody. I was at the Chelsea Stoke game,
right?
And I thought it was actually quite disrespectful to the maybe 1,500 Stoke fans who travelled, because Mark Hughes could have said, "I'm going to make changes for this game." You know, not he couldn't. He didn't need to be as blatant as saying, "Don't bother coming because we're going to lose."
Right.
There were players who played against Newcastle who played against Chelsea, and they'd just been beaten 5-0. You know,
right.
and he put two teenagers at fullback, one of whom isn't a fullback. I mean, I can't really see how he's not culpable.
Mm.
Well, who does the blame lie with? He left his best four players on the bench.
Right. But then justification comes when they beat Newcastle at home.
Well, yeah, that was the plan. Yeah, I thought, I mean, Newcastle had a few great chances to score before Perez did. Kieran Clark missed an incredible opportunity. Hughes' defence to his selection tended to be, well, who else could I have picked in defence? That was the thrust of his argument. But he left Shaqiri, Allen, Crouch and Choupo-Moting on the bench. Mm. And they're not defenders, so...
Yeah, there was a couple of questions he asked. He answered with questions, didn't he? Mm. The same way he was asked, "Are you the right man for the job?" And he said, "Well, who else is going to do
yeah.
it?"
Which seems. And I love how he put the reason why he should stay is like, no one knows this group of players better than me. It's, well, yeah, because you've been in the job for so long. But it's just.
You do wonder whether he's had a look and gone, well, Allardyce has got a job, Pulis has got a job, Hodgson's got a job, Pardew's got a job. And that's in his mind. He is thinking, maybe I'll stay in my job because there's no one else.
Well, we'll see if his reasoning on this occasion turns out to be correct. They are, in the meantime, away at Coventry on Saturday. Coventry are third in League Two at the moment. They don't score many, but they have the meanest defence in the division. The whole of League Two. Be an interesting test that will Barry Eno get another run out, do you think, poor chap?
Yeah, I felt really sorry for him, actually.
Because even Shane Long scored now.
Yeah, yeah. And he, I mean, in the game at Chelsea, he just had no service whatsoever. He had one one-on-one with Courtois, who's not the goalkeeper you want to be facing with a one-on-one, made a good save. But yeah, it's a sad story, the Barry Eno story. And I know he maybe brought some of it on himself, but it's never
Well, that's
fun.
What Tony Pulis always used to say.
Yeah.
I don't know in what way. I mean, he may be right, but... It did. Tony Pulis always used to kind of hang him out to dry and say, I don't want to be hard on the lad, but...
but I'm going to be anyway.
I'm going to be. Mark Flynn saying, now that Shane Long has more goals in a calendar year than England's Rose Harry Kane, does this make him now a target for Liverpool? Mark. that's all that's all your FA Cup then, isn't it? Super. Let's now get the odds from Paddy Power with Ian McIntosh.
Thanks, James. I'm here with Lee Price from Paddy Power. Welcome to the studio, Lee.
Thank you. It's very exciting to be here.
We've got some FA Cup games, haven't we? Absolute punter's graveyard, surely.
Yeah, I've been parachuted in for Paddy, who doesn't fancy pricing these up.
Not
surprised.
There
should be some cup sets this weekend, and let's try and pick them.
Yeah, Wolves-Swansea is first on our list. I mean, these two are basically going to swap places next season, aren't they?
Yeah, does this count as a cup set? I think Wolves should be an absolute banker this weekend. They're runaway leaders of the Championship. They're Man City, but a lower league. They're 4-5, so odds on to beat Swansea. Swansea have got a tough run of games. They have got Newcastle away next, so maybe they should do a Mark Hughes and rest their entire team.
Well, this is the only thing with Wolves. They rested most of their team against Man City, but then the stand-ins actually did a pretty decent job.
I really fancy Wolves here.
Yeah, I can't see any hope for Swansea. Southampton-Fulham. Southampton haven't won since they beat Everton that time, which I don't even think should count, given
that's
how bad Everton
really,
were.
Wasn't it? Yeah, they haven't won in 9 games. Shane Long has scored for the first time in 11 months. But Fulham scored 4 times in 7 minutes the other night, as you know.
Yeah, so. I was there. Fulham are great fun.
No, I fancied them this season, but they're disappointed slightly at the start. They're 21-10 to win against Southampton at home. Saints are our slight favourites for some reason at 5-4. Their boss does need a win. They've got a tough run of fixtures coming up. He could do without a cup set here.
Fair enough. Right, the one that I'm going for, Shrewsbury against West Ham. Now, in 2003, David Moyes was beaten by Shrewsbury. He was Everton manager
it's
at
fake.
The time. So I'm sticking with this one. But I'm a big fan of Shrewsbury, the way that they play, the team ethic. Am I right, or am I just...
Yeah, on paper, I thought you were slightly mad, but I looked into it. Shrewsbury are second in League One. West Ham, their next 5 games, how about this in the league? Huddersfield, Bournemouth, Palace, Brighton and Watford. They have to stick out the reserves and focus on the league. West Ham are evens to win. Shrewsbury are 5-2. The same price for the draw. Massive value there.
Yeah, Shrewsbury won't give them an inch. And finally, Coventry against Stoke. Coventry, sort of synonymous with Golden Age of FA Cup, aren't they?
Yes, and this could be Mark Hughes' swan song. They've got Man United next, so he's got no chance. Stoke are odds on to win a game of football. Isn't that mad? They're 4-6. Coventry are 4-1 to win at home. They're flying high in League Two. 11-4 the draw, I fancy. But yeah, Stoke, I think this is the end of Hughesy.
Do we even know if Mark Hughes is going to be in charge for this game?
It's odds on that he goes this month. I would say it's a question mark.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And of course, when the fun stops,
stop.
Where are you off to this weekend? Mark, are you going to be, what are you going to be looking out for?
I'm not at any games this weekend, but I seem to be one of the few people who really likes the FA Cup, so I'll be watching as much FA Cup as possible.
Oh, okay.
People are quite down on it, I think.
Are they?
Yeah.
People, eh?
Mm.
What about you, James?
Inter Fiorentina on Friday night.
Of course, yeah, Inter Fiorentina. Yeah.
Bit of Cholito Simeone, Icardi.
Nice. Taste. Nice. And yourself, Matt? Well, you've obviously got your Chelsea Norwich, and then you're off with your mum to
the City Ground. Yeah, so I'm a big fan of the FA Cup third round as well, which is strange because Forest are generally terrible in it and always get knocked out. But it was a really good draw as well, despite the lack of non-league teams. The fact that it's kind of bookended with the Merseyside derby and then Brighton v Palace. Lots of interest all through the weekend, hopefully.
Certainly
and
is.
And no Manchester United on TV for the first time in 10 years.
Wow, is that true?
Yep. Yeah.
Was it 58 and out, is it, or something like that?
About that number, yeah.
Huh. If you're not a fan of the FA Cup, you could always tune in to the BDO World Championship darts. Why are you chuckling, Michael? I'm going to be hosting it. It's a proper sporting event at Lakeside, and that'll be kicking off, which I think is the appropriate term in darts, on Saturday. So
who are the favourites, Jimbo?
Well,
Wolfie. Martin Wolfie Adams.
There you go.
I'm assuming he's still BDO.
No, he is very much. Yeah.
You're going to be sick of hearing numbers like 45 and 26 by the end of the weekend, aren't you?
All I'm thinking of is the numbers.
Can they pitch the brilliantly gruff guy who does the scoring at the PDC?
Oh, he's amazing.
That we require 140.
Yeah, he's a lovely chap as well.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's good to know.
He is hairy. He is really hairy. Russ.
Right.
It's
always a slight disappointment when the other guy does it. And,
I spent a very enjoyable week doing PDC, the minor darts competition, their European Championship, I think it was called, in Bochum, Germany. Yeah. This was a while back. And Russ was very much on duty for that. And fabulous. A very entertaining man. Super. Anyway, lots to look forward to in the wide world of sport. Michael. James, Matt, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I'm impressed that Ben didn't force some wrestling chat on you like he did when Carrie was on a couple of months ago.
Oh yeah, no, we have words about that. super. We'll be back, everybody, on Monday. So do join us then, and most especially have yourself a great weekend. In the meanwhile, this has been your Totally Football Show. Goodbye.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.